TCL is a proud sponsor of the Score North Studios. TCL, America's fastest growing TV brand. It's Raised by Wolves.
Hello, welcome in. Raised by Wolves, Danny Cunningham, Dane Moore, and we are talking about an NBA team on an 8-game losing streak. Now the longest losing streak in the NBA because the team that was on a 13-game losing streak, the New Orleans Pelicans, won last night against the Timberwolves. So, Dane, things are not great in Minnesota right now.
Pretty brutal, man. I mean, it's just, I think the feeling I have is just it's disappointing. We had a team that was really interesting to follow, I thought, through the first 15, 18 games of the season.
Absolutely, yeah.
It opened up a lot of interesting conversations of what is Karl Anthony Towns in this new role, and how does, you know, Andrew Wiggins, what is his perspective is if he is going to be playing in this sort of way? And then just kind of the bottom falling out of the West, it was reasonable to paint a path for this Timberwolves team to make the playoffs. And now when you go on a losing streak like this, it just becomes a lot more or a lot less fun because you can't think about things in that sort of way.
Yeah. Well, and I think it becomes a lot less fun for everyone inside the organization. Like, it certainly feels like you can feel frustration inside of Mayo Clinic Square, inside of Target Center, whatever building you want to be in. You can feel the frustration around the organization, understandably so, because 8 straight losses is not anything that's ever fun to be a part of. And it doesn't look like it's getting easier, at least not this weekend. So at some point, something's got to give. I don't know what it's going to be. They've stuck to the system that they want to play. I do think that even through this losing streak, they have done that. They just don't have the pieces to run it. That's something that they knew going into the season. While I didn't think it would ever get to a point where they went through a stretch this rough, I also think that we also have to look back at what the preseason expectations were. And I know you were higher on this team than I, but you didn't expect them to be a playoff team. No, but even then, you didn't expect them to be a playoff team. And then they jump out to that 7-4 start through 11 games. And we're all like, well, we better start looking ahead. Who could they face off in the first round? Like, could they get the 6th seed? What's this look like? And now this has kind of put everything back into perspective a little bit. So, okay, this is kind of who we thought they would be.
Right. And I think there's still many chapters yet to be written.
Sure.
I think even in your expectation when you were a 33-34 win team, that projection implies ups.
Yeah.
And obviously downs too. And I just think that those are going to continue to come. I don't see any reason why this team should be similar to teams of the past where they can't ever string together more than 2 wins in a row. I think that will come again. I think there will be a 4 or 5 game winning streak, and it's for the same reasons that I thought that they would be a team that won games more towards closer to 40 was because they have Karl Anthony Towns and a player who, when he's playing like he was at the beginning of the season, your teams are going to lose to that guy. It's just going to happen.
What do you think has changed along the lines of him? Because, well, yeah, he was really good, especially in the fourth quarter against the Clippers. The guy that he was the first really 3.5 games prior to the fight with Joel Embiid hasn't been necessarily that guy since. Like, and it's really hard to be that guy. That guy was like league MVP level Karl Anthony
Towns. I get what you're
saying,
though. It's like,
but since then he's only been like all-star level Karl Anthony Towns, which is still really good, but not what we saw early on. And I'm curious as to what you think the reason for that has been.
Well, at the beginning of the year, when we saw him really fitting well into the system, the question was, what does a bad game even look like for this sort of guy? If he's going to be taking 10 threes a game, and we know he's a 40% three-point shooter, and he's dynamic in other areas of the floor, then it seemed like he might only have 2 or 3 or 4 like bad games the entire season.
Yeah.
And that hasn't been the case. And what I think the adjustment is, and why it's going to be more than 4 bad games this season, is that teams understand how to take that away. They've so clearly prioritized not giving a crap about anyone else on the floor other than Andrew Wiggins. And when Karl Anthony Towns has to go through 2 or 3 bodies, that's extremely difficult. That's extremely difficult for Giannis Antetokounmpo. That's difficult for LeBron. And it won't be consistently good until there is help on the margins around him. And that I would put that on guys other than Andrew Wiggins and Robert Covington.
I would agree.
There needs to, because I don't think Wiggins and Covington aren't necessarily. Wiggins certainly isn't doing what he was doing at the beginning of the year, but he still looks competent. The issue for him is he's also seeing three bodies.
Yeah.
And so until there's consistency around them, whether that comes from Jarrett Culver, Josh Okogie, Napier, Teague, whatever, if you're not getting that, Karl-Anthony Towns can't be the all-world player. He can't.
Where does this team go from here now? Because it is 8 in a row. I'm struggling to even find things that they're doing well at the moment. Now,
you know what, man, though?
The fourth quarter against the Clippers was one thing, but
they're still good at offense.
Yes, you are right. I think with the exception of last night, because last night was not the case, yeah, and Towns didn't play, so understandable. They've been league average offensively, which throughout this streak is...
Eighth. They've been eighth in offensive rating over the losing streak.
Okay, I hadn't checked after the Clippers game.
But literally just did.
I think they were 14th heading into the Clippers game.
Okay.
In the NBA. That's fine. Or actually, no, I hadn't checked during the streak. I had checked for the total season. I think they're 14th or around that area, which is fine. Actually, that is better than I thought they would be offensively, because I just didn't believe that the pieces fit the system, and they don't. But they can't defend now. That's where I thought they'd be better. I thought that they would be a little bit better of a defensive team than they have been, because I thought, okay, David Vanderpool's going to come in with a different system that's going to work. It's worked other places. They're going to be better. And they were for a little bit, but now they're just awful.
Turns out the system isn't all that different.
Yeah.
Technically, it is. I mean,
we thought it might be.
We knew that he had a pedigree of being a quote-unquote defensive guy.
Yes.
And, I mean, what's played out is he's brought in a very similar defensive scheme to what they're running, that Tom Thibodeau was running. And, you know, we looked at the beginning of the season, and you saw a lot better execution within that same scheme.
Yes.
And that, you know, that was reason for optimism. But I think before the season started, I was very skeptical about using specifically Karl-Anthony Towns in that same sort of capacity back towards the rim, being a critical component of your defensive back line. And while I believed in it for a little bit at the beginning of the year, what we're seeing now is Cat has to defend. He has so many responsibilities on the back line, and with those breakdowns, he is not the quality of defensive center that can erase the issues that are happening at the point of attack, are happening, you know, closer to the nail, whatever. He just isn't a dominant defensive center.
Yeah, and that's going to be a problem. And I just don't know where improvement on that end of the floor is going to come.
Well, what I think we know is they're going to stick with that system.
Which is fine. And I do think that's a good thing, because they have said all along that it's going to be system over personnel. And at some point when it gets rough, it's easy to think, okay, we should change what we're doing. But I do applaud that. If you believe this is what's going to work eventually when you get the right personnel in, I applaud sticking with it. And that's what their mindset's been. And I think Ryan does deserve credit for that.
Yeah, I think you're just when you consistently are running out anything that is not the optimal way, you know, the optimal way to play the players on your roster, there becomes, I think, a lingering effect of that. When you're a player and you go, take Robert Covington, for example, you know, I don't think that this is the way to maximize my skill set, if that's what he's thinking.
Yeah.
Then doing that for 8 straight games, when your team loses all 8 games in a row, you know, what sort of mental impact does that have on you as that player? And losing is going to test this whole theory of system over personnel. And when players are just going to go, this isn't working, then they're going to individually start breaking. That's what's happened a lot, you know, over the losing streak, is individually being like, oh, this isn't working, I'm going to pull myself out of this position to try and be Superman here or whatever. And it just leads to many, many breakdowns. I mean, they're not only last in defensive rating over this run. I mean, they're
the month of December.
yeah, I mean, since Thanksgiving, I mean, they have the worst defensive rating in the league, and it's 2.2 points
what
worse
than the
Cavs.
What is it after last night? I haven't looked today, but what
it's
is
121.2, and that's
so
30th.
So it's down to, it was 123.5 before yesterday, so they improved yesterday. They played well defensively
but
yesterday.
But it's still a massive gap between them and the Cleveland Cavaliers, who are 29th.
And that's a team that's starting two guards that cannot legally buy alcohol.
True.
For the Wolves to not be better defensively during the stretch than that team, starting two guards that can't buy alcohol and Kevin Love, that's rough.
It is rough, man. And we're talking, it's not one, I mean, one game of defensive rating or the points you allow, whatever, isn't super meaningful. Kind of the flow of the game
but
dictates
been,
that to some
it's
degree.
Been strung together. Now.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
it's not, oh, they had a bad night defensively. No. This is a trend. This has been eight games of being the worst defensive team in basketball. It's and not, oh, they had a rough night against the Clippers.
What do you think the reason is for that?
I think part of it starts just with, I think part of it, Robert Covington playing out of position, I do think hurts them. I think part of it is that they give up a lot of offensive rebounds. They don't rebound well enough. So you see times when
that's a good point.
They get stops. And they give up an offensive rebound. Like, there was an instance, I'm trying to think of exactly what happened last night, but it ended with Drew Holiday hitting a three off of an offensive rebound. It was, I want to say the Wolves had cut it down to like eight, mm-hmm. down to eight, or so, they got it down to single digits in the second half. They get a stop. The Pelicans get an offensive rebound, and Drew Holiday buries a three from the top of the key.
Yeah, I remember that.
Those types of sequences happen time and time and time again to this team. And that's a big reason as to why they can't defend. It's hard to defend for 24 seconds, no matter who you are. It's hard to defend in the NBA. Guys are really, really good offensively.
Give them another 14.
When you give them another 14, mm-hmm. it's even tougher. And when you give them another 14 on top of that, which the Wolves have done several times, it becomes nearly impossible to keep teams off the scoreboard.
So pre-losing streak, they were 13th in the league in defensive rebounding rate.
Yeah.
And now, during this losing streak, they're 24th. And that's
during
been,
the losing streak, they're 24th, or they're 24th for the season now?
During the losing streak, okay. They're 24th. And that's noteworthy because that's been a symptom of bad Timberwolves defenses for years.
And I don't think that's a Timberwolves exclusive thing. If you can't rebound, you're typically not
good defensively. Well, this is why I would say it's bad, because last year they were 27th in defensive rebounding rate and 24th in overall defense.
Yeah.
The year before that, they were 25th in defensive rebounding rate, 25th in overall defense.
There's
25th before,
there.
27th, 25th, 28th. I mean, that's Karl Anthony Towns' career. They've never been better than 25th in defensive rebounding rate, and they've never been better than 24th in defensive rating.
Yeah.
So you're right. It is a symptom of bad defense.
And that's something that I don't know how they're going to be able to fix that. Because they do see the one.
I do, man. Play better rebounders. You just talked about Covington out of position.
Well, that's where they seem stubborn. They don't want to move him to the three.
Well, okay.
We
know how they could approach it.
Yeah, I'm a realistic thing that they actually will do, because I don't think that that's something they're going to do. I think that they're going to want to continue to emphasize system over personnel, and part of that system is playing Covington in the four.
But they've started playing. They've taken like steps in the gray towards that, where you're playing. You know, Cat and Covington's minutes have been staggered a little bit more,
yes.
So that, you know, when Cat is in, he's playing with Jordan Bell. And I think the idea there is more size for rebounding purposes.
Well, and Jordan Bell feels to me like a bigger version of Josh Okogie.
Yeah.
Where he's just trying to bring energy. I mean, he has rebounded the ball well in the limited time that he's gotten on the floor. And that's been something that has helped him. He's obviously not the cure for all of this.
No, but
I think you're foolish to think so. But he has helped in that area.
I think if I were a fan, I would be encouraged by the notion that they are not just blindly going system over personnel no matter what.
Yes,
we could list some adjustments that they've made over time, and I think we're going to see some further adjustments made as well too, because even though they're laying a blueprint, whatever, they're not going to. They can't play the next, what are they now, 10 and 16? So we got like 56 more games this year.
A lot of games left.
Yeah. They probably overestimated what they could do defensively with the smaller ball lineup. Well, and I think they'll continue to change it.
Do you think that the start they got off to led them to overestimate that? Because they started off strong defensively. Sure. I mean, I understand Kyrie scored 50 opening night, but no one else on Brooklyn really did much. Mm-hmm. They were strong in that game. They were strong against Charlotte, who, I mean, Charlotte was Charlotte.
No, beginning of the year. Yeah, it was solid. They played strong against
Miami. And again, Jimmy Butler wasn't part of that Miami team that night, but they played really well defensively. And then it has turned.
It's kind of funny. In hindsight, it's kind of easy to poke holes in some of those early season wins now.
It's always been easy. People just didn't want to do it.
Yeah, you're right.
Brooklyn was night one. And those types of situations are hard for the team that is brand new. There's a lot of emotion. I mean, you can think back to like when the Warriors added KD, they didn't look right away. Mm-hmm. When the Cavs got LeBron and Kyrie and Kevin Love all together the first time, they lost to the Knicks that night. A bad Knicks team they lost to that night. So it's easy to...
I mean, and other side of that is, you know, credit to the Timberwolves for having some continuity coming in.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
You know,
I mean, Carl was out of his mind in those first couple games. That's part of it.
And, yeah, it's just... So their, you know, their defensive rating before this losing streak was 107, and now it's 121. I mean... That's just massive.
That's a major jump.
I mean, we're talking about numbers a lot here too, but I mean, you just see it watching the game. And the biggest thing that I notice, it just doesn't take any sort of special skill set the lack of communication, particularly in transition defense, is atrocious.
Yeah.
It's atrocious going back and not communicating while you're running as to who's got who. And it's something that they make a little bit harder on themselves by playing such interchangeable positions at the 2, 3, and 4.
Yeah.
That kind of the 2, 3, or 4 can guard any of the other 2, 3s or 4s.
It makes communication that much more important, and
they're bad at it.
Very clear that it's not a strong suit. There was a play against the Pelicans on Wednesday night, and I cannot remember for the life of me who it was. It might have been Jordan Bell essentially having to like pretend to guard a ball handler because whoever, it might have been Jeff Teague, was so late getting back down on the floor.
I think it was Noah Vonleh.
It was a big.
Yeah, he started yelling.
Yeah.
He started yelling because he's like, why is nobody here to stop the ball? Like, I'm the center.
He's like trying to not go over as far. He's trying to not commit all the way to it, but he's got to continue to slide over until someone gets there to save him.
Because and otherwise, Drew Holiday's just going to walk down and pull a wide open three.
Yeah.
In your face. Yeah.
I'm glad you know the instance I'm thinking of. But it's those types of things happen time and time again with this team.
And, I mean, that's unacceptable on a ton of different levels. That's unacceptable for the players, and that's unacceptable from a coaching standpoint. It is those specific things that should have been ironed out in 4 days of practice.
Yeah.
We can talk about the stupid stuff like tucking your jersey in and inbounding the ball for part of the reasons why you lost. But those are pretty dumb, isolated incidents. The lack of communication is something that has infected the entire last month.
Yeah.
And you got to care more about that. And then I think you got to hold players accountable who aren't. And I don't know. They kind of have some like lighter personality guys, more soft spoken. When you think about Kata Bates Diop, Andrew Wiggins, kind of in those 2, 3, 4 guys who I think particularly need to communicate. I mean, they need to be like yelling at each other, communicating what is going on. And they don't really have the personalities for that.
But
that's still not an excuse.
Do you think this team needs like an alpha type of character, type of leader? Because we don't know if Karl Anthony Towns can be a leader, a locker room leader on a good team. We don't know that. He hasn't been that. And until you prove that you can do that, it's always going to be a question. That's not an indictment on him. It is a thing that you have to prove you can do it before it happens.
It's an inherent personality trait, archetype, whatever.
Do you think that this team is missing something like that? Now, I don't want to bring Jimmy Butler into this because that's not the right thing to do here, but a personality that's going to...
Hold people accountable.
Yes. Yeah. That's not on the coaching staff because it's not always the coaching staff's job.
That's not Ryan's personality archetype either.
No.
As much. I mean, I'm not saying he... And Carl, too. I'm not saying they don't hold people accountable.
No, I'm not trying to say that either.
But it's... But yeah, particularly when it's an issue that is happening over and over and over again, you need somebody to say, damn it, I'm not taking this anymore.
This has to stop.
This has to stop. And I don't know. You're right. I don't think Carl's that type of person to do that within the game. And then I think what Ryan has to do is to bench guys. And ironically, that happened last night. Ryan did bench Gorgui Jang.
And Gorgui Jang broke a water bottle.
He freaked out.
Yeah.
So then, you know, you got to be willing to be held accountable too.
Yeah, that's also part of it.
And I think that's just within all the kumbaya, now all of a sudden, if you have any finger pointing, you know, that finger point becomes a poke, you know, and you're like, don't touch me.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not okay. You know, I mean, and you know what, like, if somebody doesn't become an alpha, if somebody doesn't begin holding their teammates accountable on the defensive end, and if players aren't punished playing time wise by not playing defense, it's not going to get better. They're not, maybe they won't be the worst defense for the whole season, but they will be where they have been the past 4 years, which is 24th, 25th, 27th, and 28th in defense. That's Karl-Anthony Towns' career, what this team is defensively. And you got to shake stuff up to make stuff change.
Yeah. I just don't know what they're going to be willing to shake up. And I don't know how much I trust the defensive system they're running to work. I do actually trust the offensive system that they've got. I think that when they have the right personnel in, that system can really, really work.
Again, eighth in offense, even over the losing streak.
Yeah. I don't know that I trust what they're doing defensively as something that can lead them to be a winner. Because if we've learned anything in the NBA over the last couple of years, yeah, Golden State has played beautiful basketball offensively. But you know what? Mm-hmm. They always had a top 10 defense. The Cavs team that won the title, they finished 10th in defense. Now, after they won the title, they didn't care a lick about defense until now. But the year prior to them winning the title and the year they won the title, they were really strong defensively. Yep. The Raptors last year, very good defensively.
Bucks. Yep.
The Bucks, yes, exactly. Very good defensively. There's a common theme to teams that are always in the playoffs, and it is they play good defense.
Yeah, and you have to have personnel for that too. And I haven't written it yet, but I've been talking about it on my podcast. Is I'm really toying with the idea of this team, when it's maximized, might be that you need to have Karl-Anthony Towns as more of the four defensively, and you need to have another true rim defending center next to him, because this system, if you're going to keep this system, it is so reliant on a big body deterrer at the rim. And I don't think he can be that.
I don't think he is that. I think Carl is an oversized four.
Yeah, sure.
I don't think Karl-Anthony Towns is a center in today's NBA. And that, I'm not saying that is a bad thing. It's not a knock on him. It's who he is. He is an oversized four. He's a large power forward that can do absolutely everything offensively that you could ever ask him to do. But he doesn't play big enough defensively to be a center.
He doesn't. So I mean, again, we're seeing some of those adjustments. You've seen Jordan Bell playing alongside him. I mean, we've seen, which kind of shifts Covington down to the three when the three of them are out there together. But if you want to talk about next year or years down the road or trade done, you know, acquisitions for this team, I don't think we need to stay so narrow as the vision of D'Angelo Russell and a lead ball handler who can run pick and roll with Cat. Like, no, man, that the offense, even in these terrible times and a season that's now got to a point that's underwhelming, the offense is fine. There is a baseline of close to a top 10 offense just with a Karl-Anthony Towns-led group. They're just, you have that.
Yeah, and I think that's only going to improve, too. Once they get used to the system, which, listen, they're 26 games in.
One shooter, that would help.
Get another shooter. And I do think that having a dynamic point guard would help. Like, if they strike gold.
It would, of course, help.
It would make better, but
everyone
it doesn't need to be D'Angelo Russell.
I know. Everyone's like, well, if you just got Jeff Teague out of here and we could run a real offense and we could get Carl within the pick and roll, and we could, when was the last time he hit a lob? When was, you know, Jeff Teague doesn't shoot the three, all that. You know what? You need a defender way more than you need that.
You need
way more.
Defenders.
The offense is fine. The offense is fine. Optimally, you get a big body center who also helps you on offense.
Yeah.
Who can hit threes there. Those do. I mean, they're hard to find, but acquiring D'Angelo Russell would also be extremely difficult. So I don't know. So narrow as thinking like they need a point guard.
I don't think at this point D'Angelo Russell, acquiring him solves anything. Sure, you get marginally better offensively, but you're good offensively. Mm-hmm. You're going to get worse defensively. If we didn't think that was possible, adding D'Angelo Russell to the mix right now.
Not to mention that you're going to have to be trading your good best pieces defender. On your team.
You're probably going to have to trade your best defender in Robert Covington to make that happen. So, yes, they would get worse defensively. I'm confident in saying that because you're adding a minus defender and you're taking away by far your best defender.
Yep. It's not to say that D'Angelo Russell couldn't work on this team. They would just need to make then other adjustments around it to really boost up the rest of the defense. But because of that, because it never has been a perfect fit to bring in D'Angelo Russell. If you want it, we want to talk about the trade deadline because this team's going to be out of the playoff hunt. Then let's talk about a lot of different positions and a lot of different ways that they could improve it. Because no matter to get that caliber of D'Angelo Russell, we want to call that like a top 40 player in the NBA.
Sure.
No matter what that is going to be, getting a top 40 player is going to be extremely difficult for this team to do. And if you cut down that top 40 into only lead ball handlers, now we've got a list that's a lot smaller.
It becomes like a top 11.
Yeah, and a couple of which are like Steph Curry and James Harden. And
you ain't
like
getting
that.
Them.
Exactly. So I'm saying, so open up, broaden your horizons, consider all the different things you know that you could do. And I don't know. I really think, given how we've seen this system play out, that a big body center who can also spread the floor would do a world of good for the season now and into the future.
I just don't know if that guy's available. I know we talked a little bit last week about maybe like a Miles Turner being that guy.
It's the name I've been bringing up. Just that archetype.
Yeah. That I just don't know that they're going to be able to make it happen.
Yeah, well, I don't know if they're going to be able to make D'Angelo Russell happen either. So
I don't think they should make D'Angelo Russell
happen.
We're
getting that type of player is going to be hard, period.
Yes.
So let's just consider all of our options, not just a point guard.
I do want to talk a little bit of trade stuff here because further now from last time we talked, and we did talk trade stuff, but now I think that at least I'm certainly in the camp, they're going to be sellers. I can't imagine them buying and trying to salvage this year. I mean, maybe they do, but I don't see that in the cards. What do you think they can get for Jeff Teague at this point? Because I think it's very clear that he is very gettable from, and if anybody wants Jeff Teague, they can call Gerson Rosas and get him for the right price.
Yeah, but the issue with that is
the money.
To get him is you're going to need to send back $19 million. You need to send back like $16 million to make the salaries work. And I mean, how many $16 million dollar players out there.
This is why it's a tough discussion.
It's why it's an extremely tough discussion. And, you know, this super cliche one that I brought up a bunch of times is like Alan Crabb, who's in Atlanta and he's on a terrible contract like Teague and he's a shooter. So that would theoretically be, you know, have a benefit to the Wolves this season. But then at the same time, why does Atlanta want Jeff Teague?
They have Trae Young.
Alan Crabb is expiring after the year. And then what do the Wolves do at point guard? That now you only have Shabazz Napier and the Andrew Wiggins experiment.
Well, I think that if you deal Jeff Teague, if the Wolves trade Jeff Teague, I think that they are leaning in 100% to Andrew Wiggins playing point guard. Andrew Wiggins is your go-to point guard if that's the case.
And for the rest of the season and for the future?
You see what you have for the rest of the season because regardless of what it is, I don't think Jeff Teague is playing for the Wolves in 2020-2021.
Yeah, sure.
I'd be very surprised if that's the case. So it gives you the rest of this season to figure out if that's the case.
Yeah, I think what the future is for, I don't think there's any way that Andrew Wiggins is the point guard of the future. I think what they want is for him to be a secondary ball handler who operates at the point frequently.
Sure.
And that theoretically should work with this roster where you have a point guard like Jeff Teague. But Jeff Teague does not want to play within the confines of the system.
Yeah.
So it messes it all up. And I don't know. So you need to find, I don't know. They would need to get another point guard back if they let go of Jeff Teague, because I don't think it would be enough to just roll with Shabazz Napier and Andrew Wiggins as your point guard.
Or they give Jalen Noel minutes and they lean into going young.
Yeah, but you see him as being a lead ball handler?
I'm not
I
saying
we haven't seen him play
that
much, but from what...
This is also, if Jeff Teague is gone, you're not leaning into, we're running for the playoffs here.
What I've heard about Jalen Noel is he's very much struggling to pick up the NBA level game, and even at the G League level. And so for that if that's true, then bringing him to the NBA where he's in a point guard position
would be a big ask.
Yeah. Would be a big ask. I'm more as it pertains to Jalen Noel, and I think we'll probably get there to some point in this season, is, well, let's give him that kind of Keelan Martin role that we saw earlier, which was like, we just desperately need shooting.
Mm-hmm.
So put Noel out there to be the off-ball shooter. But again, this goes back to what we were saying before. The shooting and the offense is not the primary issue with the team. Jalen Noel isn't going to help your defense.
Also true.
So rocking a hard place in pretty much every single thing you can lay out there. I would just prioritize... I would prioritize defense, because we saw at the beginning of the year that defense leads to pace, that leads to offense, that leads to a vibe that emboldens the group.
Do you think that the pace at which they've played, at which is for the entire season fourth, do you think that's where they want it?
Yeah, they're 10th in pace during the losing streak.
Because they're at just over 104 for their pace number.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know that that's a high enough number for what they wanted.
I think I think they don't have the personnel to
sure.
to play with more pace than they have.
I feel like they would have wanted to be around 107, 108.
Sure. Like where they were before. Jake Layman is not going to be the
Anecdote's a story. Yeah. Antidote is a helpful potion.
He would help the team play faster, and I think specifically, like, kind of gets Josh Okogie going a little bit.
Sure.
You need him to spark speed into the offense, both of them. But yeah, it's clearly slowed down. I mean, particularly last night without Cat, it was really...
Last night was miserable for their pace.
Yeah, so, I mean, they're dropping back towards being a more average-paced team. They have during the losing streak. I do think there would be some benefit to going faster. I also believe there's diminishing returns to pace. I don't think you just get a gold star and like 10 extra points if you play the fastest.
No. As we've learned, you don't know, playing fast does not always equate to playing well.
A lot of bad teams. There's a lot of bad teams who play fast, and there's a lot of
really good. The Washington
Wizards
play really fast.
Yeah. It's so yeah, but do I think they would benefit from more speed? They need things that can spark energy. And that's why I think playing faster would do a lot for this team right now. But when we talk about into the future, and particularly when Karl Anthony Towns is part of your team, he's always going to be a somewhat postbound player.
Yeah.
Like they don't need to be top five in pace every year for the next 4 years.
No.
That's what I think.
That's fair.
What else you got? You just seem so sad, Danny.
I'm not sad.
I think you kind of relish in this dysfunction.
All I know is dysfunction, Dane. That's all I've been around is dysfunction.
Well, so same with every one of the listeners to this podcast.
That is very fair. I mean, the listeners and I have gone through about the same number of NBA coaches.
That's true.
My career has been nothing but fired coaches, and the Wolves' history has been nothing but mostly.
That's why you're fitting
coaches.
In so well.
Yeah, I am basically Minnesotan because of that. It's the best way I can look at it.
You know, it's kind of separately. It's also that element to me is a bummer of the fans, you know, not feeling like they have something to connect to. And I don't blame them. You know, they've been burned, and a lot of this team isn't fun to watch. Even though the offense is working well, it's kind of hard to watch a team put up 43s and make 29% of them.
Yeah.
Even if it's, you know, functional in the aggregate, like I think that's irksome for people. And then for sure, like, you know, I think I defend Jeff Teague from time to time, but I understand as a fan who's, you're trying to enjoy watching the game, that's not fun.
No,
I mean, he's a guy.
It is not.
He's a guy who's taken away from your experience of what you want the team to do, which is feed Cat and feed Wiggins and like not get in the way. I feel their pain with it. I just, I want to see more connection from the fan base, because it stinks being at Target Center, and it's like everyone's sitting there. I mean, the Clippers game, you know, Covington, they are making a comeback and they're getting it back to five, and you know, he's pumping up the crowd and people like doing his raise the roof sort of thing, and people don't stand up.
Yeah.
And I'm not calling out the fans for not doing that, for not standing up, because they're like, you were just down by 27. Like, I'm sitting here going to drink my beer. Like, I get that.
If you're still there.
But it's like, at the same time, this needs to become more fun. This needs to become more fun for fans. And again, that is just as important part of the blueprint of the future of this. Like, even though the Wolves need to re-engage their fan base and make them believe in something, connect to this team. Because there's a total disconnect right now. I don't know what the answer is. It's a bummer. I know for a fact people here like basketball.
Yeah, there's no doubt about that.
But they're at the stage where they go right now. They're like, you know, they got their hands up and they say, you know, win some games, I'll start watching on TV.
And then start
winning a lot more than that, and then I'll start coming to the stadium. I get that. It's a bummer because we got Karl Anthony Towns, who's 24 and
really good.
Really good. But the intrigue is not there.
When do you think this losing streak ends? It's at 8 now. They go to Denver tomorrow night, Portland on Saturday, Golden State the 23rd, Sacramento the 26th.
Will you give me 2-1 odds on a beer bet that they win tomorrow?
In Denver. You think they win in Denver?
No, I'm not saying I think it's more likely that they win in Denver than you do. So I'm trying to get 2-1.
I will buy you two drinks. Yes. If they win in Denver tomorrow night, I will buy you two drinks.
Okay.
If not, you owe me one drink.
I think we've talked about this before. I was talking to Charlie about it. I understand the Nuggets have good and they've been progressing this season. I think the Wolves oddly match up with them kind of well.
Because offensively, they've not been all that good, but they've been really good defensively, and that plays into the Wolves' strengths and weaknesses right now.
I'm polishing a turd here. I thought that, you know, before when they... I thought they were going to win the game at Target Center before where they went to overtime.
Yeah, they lost, but that was... the Wolves win that game if they hit 7 threes instead of 6 threes out of 45 attempts.
Yep, exactly. So... there's just something to me about the way that those two teams match up, and I don't. Carl, this bet is off if Carl doesn't play.
Sure. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. If Carl does not play, they are not winning that game.
There's just I like how the Wolves kind of fold into the Nuggets, and I think what the Nuggets really have their advantage is on their bench,
yeah,
and the depth of their team. But at the top of the Nuggets roster versus the top of the Wolves roster is fairly equal.
Yeah.
And so I think the Wolves win if they get one of those random performances from the depth guys where they make 39% of their threes, because I think the top of the Wolves roster can go blow for blow with Jokic, Murray, and Harris.
Okay.
Like, I think Jokic, Cat, right? Murray, Wiggins, Harris, Covington, like that to me. In those two separate vacuums, those are not that different. Now, the Nuggets guys, those three have a better synergy between the three of them.
Yeah.
But just we're talking about the like combined amounts of those individuals' talent. I don't think Denver is like numerous levels ahead of where the Wolves are.
That's fair. I can get on board with your reasoning. So for the sake of this discussion, let's say they lose to Denver tomorrow night, because mm-hmm. that's the more likely outcome, I think. I don't know the last time they've won in Portland. It feels like it's been forever. They just don't ever play well there.
It's like a Dave Benn stat where he rattles off like on the broadcast. It's like, it's been since 2012 at the Moda Center. The Wolves have not won a game.
That's what it feels like, though, every time they go to Portland.
That's a tough place to play. Portland's not very good, though.
No, they're not.
I got to watch a little bit more of them. I mean, I haven't watched them that much in the Carmelo Anthony
era.
But before that, before that game. But I do know just from a distance that team's got about as many problems as the Wolves do.
I don't know, man. Carmelo caught a lob last night.
Wow.
Carmelo Anthony caught a lob pass last night in dunks. So.
Okay, so Wolves lose.
Yeah, so they're not... it's just difficult for me to look at this road trip and see a high chance for a win.
So you think like one?
This
you think they go 1-3?
Like maybe be Golden State. Yeah. Because Sacramento's played really well. They got off to that really awful start. And Luke Walton kind of said, well, we went to India and we didn't have a real training camp. And everyone kind of laughed at him. Yeah. It turns out that he looks pretty correct in that assessment because they've been really good after they kind of got their legs underneath them. And they're playing drastically different than they were last year. They're not playing nearly as fast. And I think part of that is De'Aaron Fox was out for 4 weeks. But they're playing differently, but they're playing much, much better now than they were at the start of the season. That's going to be a tough game to win.
Yeah.
And Golden State, I don't know who's going to be available for them that night because everyone seems to be hurt there. But that looks like, to me, at least on paper, the best chance for them to snap this streak on the road.
That's definitely their best chance for them to win because they play Friday, Saturday, have Sunday off, and then they play Monday, Golden State, and then would it be Wednesday?
The day after Christmas.
Yeah, Wednesday against Sacramento.
Thursday.
My hot take.
Love a Dane Moore hot take. Let's have it.
I think the Wolves could win 3 of the 4 games.
Could or will?
Not will. I mean, I think the likelihood that they win 3 games is exponentially higher than what you think it is.
Sure. I will agree there.
I could see the Wolves winning 1 of the 2 back-to-back games against either Denver or Portland.
Which you feel, I don't want to say confident in Denver, but more confident in Denver than Portland, I would guess.
Similar. I think similar because Portland's worse.
Yeah.
And Portland's also playing a back-to-back.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's some of that. I just think that's like they have like a 40% chance of winning each of those games.
Okay.
And maybe like 35, whatever. You know, so pull off 1 of those. And then I think I really do think they could beat Golden State and Sacramento. There's absolutely nothing special about Golden State to me is as much as New Orleans should have been an obvious win last night, beating Golden State, even though it's on the road.
Yeah.
If this team is going to show any metal, like particularly if you need it, if you're trying to fight and convince us that you're even a 500 team, you gotta punch Golden State early and you know break them
and not let D'Angelo Russell go for 50 again.
Yeah, take care of business.
That's the thing that would scare me is that what happened last time and they're going. Draymond didn't play last time and I would guess Draymond's going to play this time. He's been healthy lately. That's something that would scare me.
I would hope that they wouldn't just completely say, go ahead and beat us from the mid-range, D'Angelo Russell, because I think D'Angelo Russell will go ahead and beat them from the mid-range.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I could see that. And then Sacramento, I have watched some of them. Even over this, they're not special.
No, they're just not bad as they were to start the season. I'm not trying to make the case for them being really good. I'm just, they're not the 0-5 team that they were to open up the year.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. I definitely agree with that. It's bad for the Wolves that these are 4 games on the West Coast where they just came from losing.
Yeah.
But these 4 to me are a more winnable stretch. Now I have more concerns about the Timberwolves this week than I did 2 weeks ago when they went on the road. But if the Wolves can get anywhere like near where they were in those Atlanta and San Antonio games right before Thanksgiving. then that team, which was still imperfect, can win 2 or 3 of these games on the road.
That's very fair. But if they don't, we could be talking about a team that goes between Thanksgiving and Christmas without a win.
I could tell you're trying to wrap this up, but like, what if it's 12? Like, what if they lose all 4 of those? I mean,
there's an avenue to that.
Totally. I'm not disagreeing with that. I'm not.
That could happen.
Yeah. It's just going to hurt because the team and the players, the organization, because they totally did, as we said at the beginning of this show, boosted up expectations.
Yeah.
At the beginning of the year by winning some games. And then what? They'd be 10 and 20. I mean, 12 games.
That was a great sound effect.
I'm sitting at you next to these games, and it's the third quarter at home, and I'm like, I'm bored.
Yeah. They have not played entertaining. Now, the fourth quarter was entertaining against the Clippers, and the first 3 quarters against the Clippers were entertaining because it's like, what is Kawhi Leonard and Paul George going to do next? That's why it was entertaining. It wasn't, wow, this is a really good game. I mean, sitting on Media Row last night, you're like, this is bad basketball. This is not a fun product to watch.
Yeah, and to me, normally I can even like get myself into being intrigued by like what, you know, watching the other players, like other players that you don't get to see in person all the time. Mm-hmm. And I'd find Lonzo Ball to be an interesting player, but even he didn't do anything last night. I'm like, well, who even beat the Wolves last night? Like Brandon Ingram scored 34. That was like a silent 34. It was just
easy. He did
easy.
It very efficiently. That's why.
Yeah. It was just game. Like, I don't know. It's just, I don't know. They gotta have a sense of urgency and a commitment to the job to just not wallow into being one of the worst teams in the NBA.
Yeah.
That maybe your expectations got blown up too high, but it's unacceptable with Karl Anthony Towns to be one of the worst teams in the NBA. They have a net rating of minus 9.7 during this stretch.
That's awful.
That's worse than the Knicks.
Yeah.
Last year, who won 17 games.
That's terrible. It's abysmal. I'm running out of adjectives for how bad this stretch is.
And the podcast.
That's a good way to end it. It's been putrid. That's Dane Moore. He's frustrated. You can find him on Twitter at DaneMooreNBA. You can find me on Twitter at RealDCunningham. You can find the podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, wherever you listen to your podcast, it's there. Find us on the all-new Score North mobile app, available for free on your Apple and Google Play Store. So we will talk to you next time.